Yeah. Yeah. What? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, then. Welcome to another episode of the Lavender Fix podcast. I'm your host, Sabreen Hazik, and I hope that you're well and that you're taking really good care of yourself, especially during these crazy and uncertain times. I don't have the patience to talk too much in this introduction today because I'm so excited. I mean, I know I say this for every episode, but really, I know a lot of the people I call on the show to interview them, and in most cases, I'm chatting with them after a really long time. So apologies if I come across as an overexcited person in every episode. So without further ado, I have to say that for today's episode, I have with me Zehra Mushahid, a Dubai-based diverse HR professional. She has expertise in recruitment, employee relationship, and CSR. And she has previously worked with prominent universities, government departments, and education advisory companies across the UK and the UAE. Now, how do I know Zehra? I met Zehra in London in the November of 2015. And from what I can remember, we were introduced by one of my college professors from India when he learned that I had moved to London. And he was friends with Zehra's mum. And he thought that Zehra and I would get on really well. And I would be forever grateful to him. Unfortunately, he's not alive anymore. So I hope his soul rests in peace. So I met Zehra through him. And then I remember when we first spoke, we had an instant connection, almost like friendship at first sight of sorts. I don't know if that's a thing, but that's exactly what it was. And I was going through a major heartbreak at the time, which is like, oh my God. And she was my genuine, honestly, like she was my ray of sunshine in the very gray and gloomy London. Now, the irony is that while I was going through this crazy heartbreak, Zehra was a newlywed bride at the time, and she was so excited about this new chapter of her life. And I was excited to be in her life, sharing this important moment and time with her, you know. And I remember she would like talk about her wedding 24/7, and she would often, you know, reminisce or show me pictures about pictures from her special moments from her big day, as any newly married person would do, right? But here is the twist, right? She had no idea that her life was going to take a sharp turn over the next couple of months. Why? Well, believe it or not, but Zehra got divorced within a few months, you guys, of getting married, because her groom literally ghosted her. Yes, you heard it right. I know it's unbelievable, right? So what happened then? I have to say that in a culture where marriage is often considered sacred and even quintessential for women, and divorce gets looked at as a sign of failure, Zehra decided to go against the tide. However, you know, there's no denying that a heartbreak is a heartbreak. So did getting divorced come in the way of Zehra living her best life? Did she give up on the possibility of finding love and companionship? Let's find out and learn from her resilience, courage, and never give up attitude. Hi, Zehra. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, very well. Thank you. Just enjoying the hot weather in Dubai. But other than that, fine. How are you?
I'm good. I bought a fresh pop filter to record this episode, and I also have some sound absorbing foam sheets. So this is just me indirectly telling you that you're very special.
And you're also very professional and very kind. Thank you so much for having me here.
All right. So Zehra, I have 26 questions for you. I know that sounds like a lot, but we'll try and get through them. Hopefully all of them. And they're very sort of specific to your experience. And so let's get started. Are you ready?
Sure. I am indeed.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So Zehra, just to set a little context for our listeners, can you share a little bit about, where you're from, your family and all that stuff?
Sure. So I am originally from England, born and brought up in London. My family still reside in London. So I'm Pakistani. My parents are obviously also Pakistani. I have three other siblings, two brothers and one sister. And the sister lives in Pakistan and the rest are still happily in UK. Also to add, yes, my parents were divorced and had been since I was very, very young.
Uh-huh. And do you think that the fact that your parents, got divorced when you were still a child, that played part in your perspective on the institution of marriage and relationships?
100%. It's impossible that it can't. It can swing both ways. It can either be something extremely positive for you, or it can be something that's extremely negative. It depends how you program yourself. So I'm an extremely optimistic person. So I chose to look for the best and to believe the best and to believe that, you know, everything can happen for the best. And I think it's important to learn why things go wrong in order to move forward in your life. And I think me and my siblings pretty much operate the same way. We have always strived to be better people and look for love and not take it for granted and not be scared of it. So 100% it does.
Right. And, considering that your parents had somewhat of a difficult marriage and, you know, you were, as kids, were trying to cope with it. Growing up, what did you envision for yourself in terms of companionship?
Prince Charming. I mean, I was always a girl in Cinderella. I'm like, you know, I watched so many Disney movies and so many Bollywood and God knows what movies that I always imagined that my life would be exactly the same. That, you know, I'd easily one day find someone very handsome, you know, we'd fall in love in one day and we'll get married and we'll never have problems. Quite naive coming from what I have come from. But again, I was overall optimistic. That was the best positive best thing about me, but also negative because it made me more naive. Mm-hmm. But you know, yeah, 100%. I was just a little girl hoping for the best in life and just very fairy tale-ish.
Right. And
but I guess we all are.
Yeah, I guess, yes, I have to say that. I mean, I've definitely been there. So Zehra, did you have I know you said you were a dreamer of sorts, and I think every girl and boy at some point in their lives or as a child has sort of thought of a timeline for how and when they wanted to get married and settle down and all that dreamy stuff. Were you the sorts who planned out this whole thing that when I'm this age, I will be married, and then by this age, I'm going to take the next step and all that stuff?
No, I mean, what has age got to do with marriage? I think it was really important to me is that when love happens, it happens. You can't force it. You can't set a deadline on it. It's going to happen when you're 50. It's going to happen when you're 20. It can happen when you're, you know, I know people who got married at the age of 40 and have kids right now, and they're really, really happy. And I know people who are, you know, 23 and, you know, it may not have worked so well as much as they hoped, mm-hmm. but it can happen anytime. And, you know, just you become more resentful. You have a benchmark. Oh, I'm going to get married at the age of 23. What if you don't get married at the age of 23? You become more insecure thinking, oh, there's something wrong with me. And I just think it's, you know, it's.
There's no point.
There's no point.
And I completely agree with you. I think that especially in a world where women especially are programmed to believe that, you know, you have a shelf life and you better get married before 25. And then by this age, you're supposed to have kids because, hello, your clock is ticking, which for some weird reason is everyone's business. Everyone considers it their business these days. So I'm really happy to hear that from you because you, my friend, are crushing stereotypes and challenging age-old societal norms. So kudos to you for that. Warming up our listeners to this episode, I mentioned that when I first met you, and this is so funny, I was miserable and I was going through a heartbreak, and you on the other hand were basking in the glory of your new married life. And I believe you'd only been married for 2 months or so, or even less maybe, which I think it was so ironic. And I was so paranoid about, oh my god, I'm going through a heartbreak and I'm probably going to poop all over her recently married kind of vibes. But can you share with me how you got together? And I know I'm sort of jumping into this too quickly, but I'm so excited. Can you share with us how you sort of got together with this guy? Who was he? Why did you decide to marry him and all that stuff?
Oh, man. Taking me back down a road that I definitely don't want to go down.
I know.
Okay. So basically, this guy I knew from university, we worked together also in university as well. So you know how everyone has side jobs. So I used to work at Pizza Hut. So did he. And you would often meet with friends and we'd just start talking. And, you know, in between somewhere, we found out that his father and my uncle were also colleagues, which, mm-hmm. you know, was really nice. So randomly, he added me on Facebook and he started talking to me. And I think it just sort of went through a smooth phase where, you know, we had grew to like each other. We had a connection during high school, university as well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, at the time, he was with someone, and I was a kid, that never happened. So that sort of, followed through, and my mother was extremely paranoid about finding me someone because she was always like, well, you know, I want you to be happy, because obviously she's divorced. She's like, you know, I want you to be happy. I want you to find someone. Kid you not, I came home. And I had people messaging me on WhatsApp because my mother had given them numbers. I'm like, what?
Oh my God.
Why? Why did this
happen?
That
is a typical South Asian mum.
Yeah, well, in her case, it was different. So in her case, she was suffering from cancer, thyroid cancer, and mm-hmm. she was extremely emotional that, you know, after I go, what will my daughter do? I want her to find love. I want her to be happy. I don't want her to be alone like me. You know, she's a powerful woman. She has achieved many things in her life. She's got an award from the Queen, so much. You know, she's gone to Guam, to the Mariana Trenches. But yet she's human. She also wants love. You mm-hmm. know, so no matter how much power you have or how much life, you know, how much you have, how well your career is going, love is something that every human being needs. And she felt the need that she felt that I would need that. So then, you know, we started talking. I told my mother about him. My mother's like, oh my God, you're in love. I said, no, wait, no. I like the guy. No love yet. But, you know, he's a better choice than the people that you're messaging me who I don't know at all. So you know, why don't you give it a shot? So then mom was like, okay. So she spoke to him. She actually found him to be quite pleasant. She spoke to the mom. They hit it off immediately. And things escalated very quickly. Like, okay, so we're going to book a ticket to Pakistan. I went to Pakistan. And even before going to Pakistan, my mother and his mother had already sort of talked about the dates, you know, when we get married. So it was very, very quick. So in Pakistan, the second day, I believe, my mother, you know, they said, okay, so let's do an engagement. You know, we really like each other. And I think everyone's okay with it. Let's have an engagement. My family don't believe in engagements. They literally, they say, no, I think the longer engagement, the more the problems. So my mom asked my grandmother, you know, what she would do. My grandmother naturally said, you know, her being all thinking, no, let's just have a nikah done. Wow. And that's what happened. So the day that it happened, I was like, okay, so my nikah's happening. Okay. So I don't know what phase I was in. I was blank. But I was like, okay, if it's happening, then it's happening. And then on the day of my nikah, the other surprise was, so I had thought that the nikah would happen in Pakistan and then the Rukhsati would happen in England where they'd come here and then because my family's here.
Right. And Rukhsati, by the way, I want to explain to those who are listening who may not understand, Urdu. Rukhsati is basically the reception. So nikah is the main wedding ceremony in the Muslim culture. And then, you know, you have the Rukhsati, which is the reception. Sorry, Zara, continue.
Correct. No, yeah. Which is a reception where the girl can finally leave the house. So then on the day, because my siblings, I should add my siblings, my father were not in Pakistan. It was just me and my mother. We went just to meet them. So me being apprehensive about the nikah already, his mother asked my mother, you know, is it possible that Zara can come in the evening, just for the evening after the nikah, just to our house, so, you know, we could just have a little bit of fun. My grandmother didn't agree to it. Mm-hmm. And then said, why don't we just have a ruksati? So I was sitting on stage thinking, okay, you know, my nikah's done. I'm feeling guilty that why did this happen? Like this without my sibling and everyone around. Next thing I know, my mother comes to me and says, oh, by the way, it's your ruksati today. I'm like, excuse me, it's my what? She goes, yeah, you know, you're leaving today. I'm like, but why? But what just happened? Mm-hmm. Why would you, like, how? And she said, oh, well, this happened. And I was like, well, you could have just said no. Or they were only asking me to go home for the evening. I could have just spent the evening. What was the big deal in that? She's like, no, you know, they said no. I'm like, who said no? Your grandmother said no. I'm like, yes, but that's my grandmother said no. Mm-hmm. You could have said, you know, wait, you know, at least the nikah's done. The most important thing is done. You should have just left it as that. But no, that's what happened during my nikah. So very,
oh my God.
And it just changed day after day. You know, everything was unexpected.
Oh my God. Nothing went to plan. So, I mean, you clearly had reservations about, like you said, that, you know, the original plan was that you would go to Pakistan and meet the guy and just sort of get familiar with their side of the family and make sure that, you know, it was the right decision. So I can tell that you had lots of reservations, but you sort of did it anyway so early on in your courtship because, you know, you were doing it for your mom. And I really admire you for that, Zahra. I think you are always giving other people and you expect very little in return. So I'm not surprised. And I was actually going to, my next question was going to be, you know, were you nervous? Were you apprehensive? But I kind of feel like we've already covered that. So I'll move on to the next question, yeah. Which is, you know, as you mentioned, your dad and your siblings, they were not present at the time of the nikah. And from what I can remember is that they didn't necessarily agree with the method and how quickly it was being done and how rushed it was because they barely knew the guy, right? And I kind of feel like if I was your friend at the time, I would have probably felt the same way, right? But finally, after this was done, so your nikah is done, your ruksati is done, how did other family members, aside from your mom, respond to this? And I'm not just talking about your dad and your siblings, but also about your extended family.
So coming back to my siblings and my father first, I think it was a point of the fact that because we come from a divorced family, there are a lot of dynamics which are unsolved. Mm-hmm. A lot of issues and disagreements that we've constantly had with each other over multiple things. So naturally, I thought, well, you know, if they don't agree with me, it's fine because they never agree with me anyway. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to do it. Which was really like childish. And because I had two things in my mind. A, I was really, really guilty because I'm really close to my brother. I really wanted him to be there. I really wanted my dad to be there. But because we do have our differences, they don't always agree with the things I do. So I felt like, you know, maybe it's the right thing to do. Maybe, you know, they'll come around later on. And I didn't quite understand, you know, because I thought it was a nikah only. I thought, you know, the ruksati will be in England, it'll be fine. So I didn't quite understand the gravity. You know, I think I was so caught in the moment, it didn't come to my mind. I think my mother's side of the family were very much like, well, at the end of the day, if she's happy, that's the main thing. She has to live with him. She has to spend day in and day out. We just hope for the best for her. I remember one day my uncle actually looked at a picture and he looked at me and goes, you know, he's handsome, but you do realize that you look far more mature than him in terms of your personality. And he looks as if he's a 5-year-old, like personality-wise. I mean, look-wise, obviously, we both look young. We both like in our 20s, we both look like kids. But the maturity, which I can definitely agree with looking back, he was a kid.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, you know, if you're happy, then we're happy.
That's nice. I mean,
so, yeah.
And what about your dad's side?
My dad's side, they didn't want to know. They were furious with me. And to the point that I understand, because they're like, how could you not have your dad at your wedding? Like, what the hell went through your mind? And like I said, I do have my differences with my father. I love my father to bits, but I think at the time there were a few too many differences. I was young, so many things going on, so many differences that I didn't, you know, it was just, it's a really hard thing for me to describe and to talk about and to probably get some of the listeners to actually comprehend what was going on there.
Right.
But they were furious, and they were like, well, she is her mother daughter. So knowing the fact that my mother's very fast forward and she's always done things herself, they're quite religious, and you know, they shy away from the world. They don't really like, I don't really know how to put this.
Strong-headedness.
They're very different.
Right.
Yeah, they're very strong-headed. Very strong-headed. So it was like, well, A, you know, firstly, he's her mother's daughter, so of course she went and do that. Secondly, she didn't give a damn about her dad. So they were very much against me. But then again, their opinion is not someone's who I listen to, because we're not particularly close till they anyway. I see them on Eid once every couple of years.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good that you were able to, you were able to block the noise out. That's amazing. And I really like admire you for that, because you were pretty young at the time, and for you to have the maturity to, you know, listen selectively was commendable. And I mean, Zehra, I know that you were apprehensive and reluctant, but also you had this overriding sort of sense of guilt, because a lot had, even though it was like not a very large ceremony and everything happened over a span of 2 days, you know, it was still like a big deal for your mom. And I remember you told me that your lawyer or your wakil at the time of the nikah was the prime minister of Azad Kashmir, which is like a huge deal and it's super prestigious, you know, and so many things were sort of done for this one day, right? Even though it was rushed. So I totally understand you were battling somewhat internally with the idea of making your mom happy, but then all these expectations, and then also pleasing your extended family. And so, yeah, I mean, I totally get it. Actually, I don't get it, but I'm trying to get it. And I remember being there.
Yeah. I don't get it either. Till date, trust me, I don't. It's fine.
Yeah. So, okay, now my question is, and I'm going to like go back and forth a little bit here, but right, going back to your nikah, because I believe you have the nikah and then you're on the same stage once the ceremony has been concluded, right? You sit together on the stage. So, did you ever sort of steal a moment of, I don't know what to say, but, you know, did you have a moment together right after the ceremony? Did you sit together, have a chat, acknowledge what had happened, or no?
No.
What?
I kid you not. After the nikah, he had some sort of anxiety on his face. Like, he kept hopping off the stage to go for a smoke. And I kept looking at him like, dude, we just got married. And he kept disappearing off the stage. So I was like, and he goes, oh, dude, I really need to smoke. And I just kept looking at him. I'm like, uh-huh. And, you know, when you see happy couples, they usually just giggle and they talk to each other on stage and they, you know, congratulate each other on stage and they're really, really happy. It was none of that. It was like, oh, dude, you know what? I'm really, really hungry, but I can't eat because 1,000 people are staring at me. I'm like, yeah, I know. But then he's also going off on stage talking to his friend and I'm just really confused. So I just kept myself busy with the guest and whoever wanted to come and greet us. And I was greeting them on my own. It was very abnormal. It wasn't the type of thing that I had envisioned. I mean, straight after the Rukhsati, he went up to the room because, dude, I'm really hungry. I'm in my wedding dress, and he dragged me downstairs in a car with his friends through McDonald's drive-through. And I'm like,
shut okay. The front door.
And I was like, well, fair enough. And then there's something called a mudakai, which is quite personal after the wedding, and where the groom actually gives the girl a gift. Okay. Now, he literally just said to me, oh, by the way, here's your present, and he just went to the washroom. So I was like, okay.
Oh, wow.
So is that moment meant to be like, okay, let me put it on for you. Do you like it? All of this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really happy. All of that rubbish. Not rubbish. But all of that thing is meant to happen. It did not, and it was like, so I was like, well, okay. Kind of, I guess, so that was my normal, because I didn't know how it's meant to feel. So I was like, well, I guess, you know, considering I'm very fairy tale-ish, maybe this is normal. Maybe this is
no,
okay.
No. I'm sorry. I think you have a tendency to criticize yourself a little too much. I don't think that that's normal. Getting married is a pretty huge deal. I mean, my husband, Tawheed, was... I'm very sure, and even when I look at some of our videos from our wedding, I could literally tell that he was shivering. But he was shivering with joy, and like we were so confused about like the fact that we were suddenly married and we were husband and wife. And no, it's not normal for him to, you know, for this guy to behave the way he did. It's unfair, and it's taking away from your big moment. So no, yeah. How old was he, by the way?
He was 1 year older than me, surprising. So how old was I? I can't even remember. This happened in 2016. How old was I? 26, 27?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was about 26, 27. And the funniest thing about that was even the photographers were like, okay, so everything that could possibly go wrong that day did. So like I had my mehndi done, which is meant to be the most beautiful part of a bride's, attire. It was rubbish. Like I went to someone and then I had to get it redone and it literally looked like, you know, where's Fine Wally scribble on my hand. And he was like, well, I can't take a picture of that. And he goes, why aren't you guys smiling? Why aren't you guys standing together? You just got married. You meant to smile.
Oh,
and we were just
God.
So stiff. We were super stiff. We weren't able to. All I heard him say is, oh God, I hate taking pictures. I hate this. I hate that. And I'm like, okay. So I was just like, okay. You know,
what?
Maybe
okay, this is
fine.
Just making me a lot more angry than I thought it would. The other thing is, same pinch on the henna, because one, I was a bit of a tomboy throughout that process. I didn't really care too much about, oh, it should be perfect. I mean, my cousin spent so much time selecting the right henna artist and making sure that they got the guy's like name written somewhere in there, whatever. Like, and I was just like, I do not give a hoot. Just do it. But like, obviously, I didn't want it to be bad. And so it's okay. I think we were in the same boat. So you're not the only bride who went through that. My henna was also like pretty like, it almost felt like I was a lab rat and they got this new guy who just sort of was scribbling on my palm. And I'm like, okay, dude, you seriously like need to get your shit together. So anyway. Okay, so right. Okay, so this thing happened, you got married, he was clearly very uninterested, which was a huge sign back then. And if I was your friend at the time, I would ask you to walk away. But it's okay. So I'm gonna try and keep my cool. And I'm going to ask
but
you
it's
the
me.
I know, but I'm going to try. So the next question is, he was obviously from Pakistan and he had a Pakistani passport. You, on the other hand, yes, you are originally from Pakistan, but you were British born. So you had a UK passport. And I'm assuming that after you got married, you had to work out a lot of the visa logistics, which is a pain. How did that go? And what was the plan long term?
So the long-term plan was that if you know the UK law, it is that you have to be married. You have to be, the spouse who is British has to be working for 6 months and they have to earn a certain amount. Now, if you suffice and you submit 6 months salary plus your WhatsApp conversations, plus the tickets that you have bought to go and see each other, plus pictures together, they ask for a hell of a lot. Plus, you know, they need some proof, financial proof. So I went ahead and did the needful. So I changed my name in my passport to Zara, whatever the name was. And then I changed my bank account details to the same name. So everything was changed. And the plan was that after 6 months, he would come to London, which was originally meant to happen. So his mother wanted me to come back ASAP. So after I got married, 2 days later, I came back to London and I just got the process ready. It was really important that we get made everything legit. So I just went straight onto it. So that was the original plan. But life doesn't always have, as life has its own way of surprising you as well.
Yep.
So in the first 2 weeks, it was pretty much in the first 2 weeks, we were very lovey-dovey, very caring, very, you know, I miss you type things and sharing pictures and, you know, how you should expect it to be. and sharing pictures and saying, you know, can you please call home? The family's really, really missing you. So I would individually call individual members of the family, start calling them. And, you know, we would talk till late night and we'd message. And, you know, it was in the first 2 weeks, short enough, but it was really, really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, that's
you know,
nice.
That was how it was, yeah. But, you know, again.
So you were doing everything that you needed to do to, you know, obviously. So, okay, so from what I gather from your answer is that you were doing everything that you needed to do to make sure that you were checking all the boxes so he could comfortably move to the UK. And obviously then the plan was to settle in the UK, right?
Of course. I mean, I had to, because at the end of the day, I wasn't in for a long-term relationship and I did not get married for a husband and wife to be living apart. A lot of people was questioned that, you know, is it just for the UK passport? No, I think you realize later that it wasn't. But the thing is, I needed to get things done because I wanted to live in London. I wasn't a big fan of moving back home as well.
Yeah.
So, because my life was there. But okay. Yeah, you know, it went well.
So let me put this, let me ask you this more plainly. Okay. You said, but somewhere in that answer. And I was like, but what? What went wrong at this time? What shifted? What happened?
So there was a girl he knew when he was in university. I think I said that in my first few questions, where he was involved with someone and they were dating for a good 6 years.
Wow.
So before we had met, she had disappeared for 3 years.
What?
Now, during that relationship, the crazy thing was, is that she had dumped him 3 or 4 times for another guy. And not dumped him, cheated on him, and he had found out. So twice before they got engaged, once they got engaged, they got she cheated on him twice again, and then they ended it. You know, he never went back to her. But she had the ability to wrap him round his little finger.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the nikah day, so remember I mentioned that, you know, he was smoking a lot and he looked anxious.
Yep, yep.
So what actually happened was that on the day of our nikah, she sent him a message on his Facebook saying, "Hi, how the hell did you get married? How could you do this to me? How could you move on with some other girl? You didn't even consult me."
What?
This and that. And I had no idea. I had no idea that this was happening. So she just literally miraculously appears after 3 years and she's saying, you know, you never told me you're going to get married and you married this buddhi, this old woman.
What an ageist.
This freak. No, it's not even an ageist. It was the fact that she thought she was young and beautiful and the fact that she had so much more charm than someone else does. And that she, okay, so that was that. And then I didn't know. So what actually happened, how I came to find out about it, was that I was at home. And this was when Facebook Messenger call was very new. So I randomly got a missed call on my phone. So I'm like, okay, who is this? And it was an American number. And so the name didn't show up on the number. But, you know, when you log into the profile, it says a name somewhere.
Yeah.
And I saw Isa. So I was like, wait, what Isa? There's only one Isa that I know of. Which Isa? Is it that Isa? And she was studying in Illinois at the time. So I was like, okay, Isa.
Chicago.
Illinois.
Okay.
Yeah, Chicago. So I was like, okay, fine. And I was like, why is she? And I guess that her whole point was to make it known that she exists. I called her back. She never answered. I called him. I called my husband. I said to him, I said, look, dude, why is she calling me? And how did she get my number, first of all? And he said, look, if she calls, don't answer her. Don't talk to her. Don't say anything to her. You know, you have to ignore her. Promise me you won't talk to her. And I was like, first of all, how did she know you got married? Second of all, why is she calling me? And he came up with, oh, so she has a password to all of my account. I'm like, excuse me? She has a what? So the whole time that we were communicating on Facebook for all of these months, she was reading. And you didn't even bother to change your password. He goes, oh, but, you know, I never bothered. I'm like, what?
Okay, Zara, I have to say this. You were married to a very daft guy.
I don't know what I was married to.
I mean, who doesn't change their password? It's also like a healthy thing to change your password every, I don't know, every year or maybe like a couple of months if you feel like the security is not tight enough. And that's just dumb. Okay, that's just, sorry, too many excuses.
It's
okay.
Not about healthy. It's not about healthy. If you know that your ex has your passwords, you change them.
Mm-hmm.
If you have not spoken for 3 years, you change them. That's it. There's no if and buts. You know, to me, I'm just like, what an idiot. So then I was like, Imad, what's going on? Oh, you know, all of this is going on. And, you know, she's just talking to me and no, we're not talking. Don't worry. I won't talk to her ever again. I was like, fair enough. And I was stupid enough to believe him, which is a lie because I didn't believe him. I said, I believe you. But in my head, I was thinking something's going wrong. So then I kid you not, within a week and a half after that, so, you know how I was saying that we would talk a lot? We'd stop talking. Like, I would message him. He'd say he's busy. And saying that he's busy, so I was, like, trying to talk to him about the system. I said, look, you know, I finally got a job and, you know, we'll have to wait 6 months. And he started giving me stupid answers like, you know, why are you so in a hurry? You know, you don't have to worry about anything. I'll move there when I move there. So he went from, oh, you know, I can't wait to be there and be married and move on to, it's not a big deal, listen, there's no pressure, let's take our time, don't worry about it. And I was thinking, what the hell? And then he completely disappeared.
What?
Like, when I say he absolutely ghosted me, Sabrine, he disappeared for 2 weeks without a word. I would message him, no answer for 2 weeks. I came to the point where I messaged his mother and I said, look, he's not answering me. She said, oh, look, but he, you know, he's probably busy. Now, the dynamics between him mother is that his mother will protect him even if he commits murder. There is nothing that boy can do wrong. Absolutely nothing. And so she was obviously covering for him. I asked the younger brother, I said, dude, where's your brother? And he's the older brother. And he said, well, you know, Zara, I need to say to you that you need to come back to Pakistan. And I'm thinking, dude, I just got a job. If I come, I leave my job. I can't get the pay slips. And he goes, look, Zara, I can't say this to you enough. If you don't move here and if you leave it, you don't leave your job, it's going to end anyway. Yeah. So he expected me to move. And I was like, what? So then I was very confused. And then his sister contacted me herself. Mm-hmm. And she said, look, you know, Zara, I'm going to be very honest with you. That girl is back in the picture. You have no idea what a piece of work she is. And when she may be a kid, but trust me, he can ruin you. And even, you know, she's got such a filthy mindset that it's really, you cannot comprehend that. And you cannot deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. So then I was obviously curious. So I kid you not, 5 months went by and it was like this. He would answer me every 3 months. Look, I'm really, every
what?
3 weeks. Look, I'm really busy. Yeah, it'd be weeks, it'd be a whole month. I remember even asking you to message him to say,
oh,
that,
I remember,
you know,
this.
I don't remember what you said to him, but you said something to him and he never responded. Or did he? Did he respond? I don't know. I can't remember.
I cannot remember, but I do remember sending him. I remember sending him a really polite text, talking some sense into him, because it was really hard for me to watch you. First of all, I think you handled yourself really well, because as a new friend, I was like, this is something I've not shared with you before, but I was like, why is she not freaking out? Like, if I was in her place, I would be losing my marbles. Why? Like, it almost annoyed me that you were so calm about it. 'Cause for me personally, I operate in two extremes. I'm either like all in and I'm like, listen, talk to me, what is wrong with you? Or I'm like, listen, screw you, I'm out of here. Right? You were in the middle. You were just like weirdly patient and it just blew my mind. So anyway, you were talking about, you obviously
yes.
wanted to find out.
Yeah, well, I wanted to find out and you telling me how I was really quiet. I don't think you actually know what was going through my head. So through this whole thing, what was going on is that I was going absolutely batshit crazy. I was not able to, my inner thoughts So put it plainly, right? So I used to go to work and I would come home very late because I never wanted to come home. It was really difficult for me. I'm not someone who could easily communicate my feelings to people. I remember times where, you know, I would call my younger brother. So my younger brother would go to my older brother's after school because obviously he's there and he could get dinner. And my brother would come home and check on me. And I would deliberately call my younger brother when I get home so I have enough time to fall asleep so I can't face him and I don't talk to him.
Hmm.
That guy, by the end of 3 weeks, was in tears. And he called my mother and said, "Ma, please, you need to speak to her. She's not talking to anyone. She's completely breaking down. I know it." And I used to break down. I used to just go completely silent because I have always been that silent sufferer type. I was never able to comprehend or try and talk about what I didn't know how to put it.
Right.
So then I grew curious of everything that's going on. And so his sister then called me and hatched a plan and said, "Come to Pakistan." And that's what I did. I left my job. I didn't leave my job. I took a holiday from my job and I made some really stupid excuse that, look, it's a really grave thing. I can't remember what excuse I made, but I made an excuse. And I was only there my first month. I left for 1 week. He and his mother did not know that I came there because his mother, and obviously they would freak out because they knew what was going on and they knew I'd find out. His sister tried to say, "Look, we need to hatch a plan to approach them because they are going to be crazy. I'm really, really pissed off that you're here." So we try and hatch a plan. Eventually the sister told him, "By the way, you're there." When we met, his parents tried to say, "Okay, look, you guys really need to sit and talk." We couldn't talk because he just wouldn't talk to me. He said to me, "Look, I'm really confused. I don't know what I want. I need time. Yes, I am in love with her and I can't get over her and I really want to be with her." And I said, "Okay, then end it." And he's like, "No, but I don't want to end it." I'm like, "You have to make a goddamn choice."
Oh my God.
I always approach things as a friend more than a wife. So I'd be like, "I'm happy to leave, but I'm also a friend telling you, you're being an idiot. Sort your head yourself out right now." I don't know why I was like that, but I was.
Hmm.
He didn't even sleep in the same room as me. Every single night when his parents said, "You need to sleep together, go down," he'd leave and he'd go and sleep in another flat. And by morning, his parents would be like, "Where is he?" I'd be like, "Well, I don't know. He never stayed." They're like, "He never what?" I'm like, "Well, he never stayed." So I left Pakistan with everything unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
So I did leave with the promise that we'll try and talk more often to try and resolve things and try and make way forward. As soon as I came back, silence again. I then, you know, did something really stupid or smart or whatever you want to call it. I created a fake Facebook account and I messaged her. And
messaged
this whole
Iza,
time, by the way.
The girl.
Yeah, messaged Iza, the girl. Yeah. And during this whole time, I'm having her friends harass me on Instagram, calling me a fat nose and ugly and all this rubbish. And I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm in high school again." And so I message her and she replies with the same thing. You know, "You're an idiot. You're grown up. Why are you acting so desperate? You're running after someone." And I'm like, "You idiot. The guy's my husband. He's not a boyfriend." And he goes, "We've been together for 6 years." I'm like, "Yeah, the guy you dumped several times. Yeah, I was a kid and I made a mistake and all of this rubbish." And she swore at me, said a few really horrible things, which I don't really want to say explicitly what, inappropriate. And then she said, "Look, you know, we're happy together." So she sent me pictures of herself. I'm like, okay, so
them
sister
together.
Seasons. So, yeah, so sister season goes, "Yeah, you know, some of these are old, but some of these are new." Yeah, I'm not going to lie, they are new. And then she sends me a video. Video was quite explicit. It was them physically.
Shut so, up. Oh my God.
And then I'm like, did I just see what?
Wait,
so
what?
I didn't even look at it again. I didn't look at it again. I just saw it and I was like,
but is she, wait, okay. Ugh. I am so confused right now. This girl sends you a video of the two of them doing the nasty, nasty. And is she like dumb? Why would she send a, like, who does that?
someone who obviously is desperate enough to prove that she's a winner. And in her mind, she thought she was. And then following that, she then says, oh, by the way, he's divorced you. I'm like, whatever. And then, no. And then she says, she sends me a copy of the divorce that he has signed. And she said, I went with him to the divorce office. I went to the magistrate office to get an annulment. He has divorced you. You're no longer his wife.
Wait, but doesn't this involve you? Like, someone can't just divorce.
So basically, in the Islamic thing, I don't know how, to be honest, I'm very unclear about this. I don't even know how it's meant to be. I think I could be wrong, so don't quote me on this. Apparently, if the man says divorce you three times or something, in separate instances, they can. But because we were married for such a long time and he was able to prove that we had not been living together, yeah, he did. He wrote something like that, that we're not living together and we haven't spoken in 6 months and all of this, and we have no proof of any relationship. Therefore, this marriage should be annulled. And therefore, he signed on it, and therefore it was, you know,
official.
It was official. And it was on a government official stamped paper. So then that was it for me. As soon as I saw that, Sabrine, I was done. I should have been done a very long time ago. A lot of the listeners would be like, who the hell are you and why the hell did you? You're probably stupid. They're probably right. I am stupid. But honestly, at that point, I was done. I was like, you know what? This is it. Okay,
wait,
fine.
Why are you stupid? No. Hang on. Going back to that statement you made about yourself, you're not stupid at all.
I was patient enough to deal with that.
Yes, but you were naive. You weren't stupid. You were trying to do the right thing. You're a good human being. I can testify that. I mean, you know, I have spent so much time with you in London, and you were nothing but kind, and you welcomed me with open arms. And honestly, despite everything that you were going through, you woke up with a smile on your face. And I can say that because I stayed over at your place a few times. So no, you were not stupid. You were trying to be a good person, and you put your foot down when you saw a video of someone. I don't even want to talk about it. And then you saw the divorce papers, and I think yes. For you to then say, I'm going to put my foot down, that was not stupid. That was like, yes, this makes sense.
It was not stupid for me to put my foot down. It was stupid that it was late. So then, you know, I just called every individual in his family because I was done. And I said, I did circulate those pictures and videos to his family, by the way, because I just thought they needed to know. And they didn't know that he had divorced me. They had no idea. So I was like, well, you know, thank you for protecting me. Thank you for being there for me. I really appreciated the time that you were for me. I will miss the love that you gave me. I wish you the best, and I have no hard feelings, and I hope that we can move on from here being in a happy place and with good memories. And that was it. I shut the phone with every individual in his family, apart from his mum, because his mum didn't pick up. His dad, he then picked up and said, oh, my dad's, he was very snobbish, very arrogant. What do you want? And I'm like, dude, I just want to say goodbye. I didn't even want to confront him. I'm like, thanks, Ahmad, thanks. I just want to speak to dad and tell him thank you for his love and for being a father. Much appreciated. That's it.
I mean,
and
honestly,
he's ill right now. So I said, okay.
Zara, I don't even know how you did that. I mean, I don't know. You have a big heart is all I can say. So, all right, now I honestly, I'm not able to move past the fact that this girl sent you videos. I think I would have been scarred for life if I saw something like that, even if I wasn't in love with the person I was married to. So how did your family respond to this development? Did they know about the videos, the extramarital affair? What was that like for your family?
So my family didn't know anything. For the whole time that this was going on, they didn't know a thing. They had a feeling that something might have gone wrong. My mother has strong intuition, and she goes, Zara, there's some other girl. I know. Zara, there is. No. So I kept denying it. My mother at the time was in Pakistan, and she went to his house. Now, they saw my mother come in, and they turned off those lights and pretended they went home.
Oh my God.
You know, that happened. But no, you know, it was beyond filth. So I mean, they never knew. Like I said, I was a silent sufferer. I said, whatever's going to go wrong is going to go wrong. And if for any reason there's a way that we can fix this, I had 5% belief that I can fix this. But I thought, if there is, I don't want my family thinking anything negative about it. I don't want them knowing all of this, because they will not move past it. So I also, that was also my main reason. And secondly, you know, I wasn't able to comprehend. Like I told you, you know, my brother came to check on me on a daily basis and I just wouldn't talk. My brother said to me, Zara, you know, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, why would you even go to Pakistan? How dare you? Do you not have any self-respect? You know, why did you not think that you can walk away from this? It's not a marriage, you know, it's a contract. No one was there at your wedding. You know, it happened all the wrong way. How can you call this a marriage? And they wanted me out at the get-go. They didn't want me in this at all. They had a feeling it was happening, even though I denied it through my teeth. They're not stupid. They knew it was happening and they just wanted me out. They didn't want me communicating. They just, you know, that was it for them.
And but Zara,
his family.
Wait, so one, okay, so they, this is what I was actually getting to. So, but his family was, were they like, one, were they apologetic at all? Like, I know you tried to reach out to a few people and particularly like his sister was really helpful in the past. In, you know, sharing some insights with you about whatever she knew. Were they apologetic? Like, you did a very good thing by calling them and sort of thanking them, which honestly I wouldn't have done. But were they apologetic at all?
His sister and his brother was. His sister and his brother tried really hard. And, you know, if I see them again, I would always welcome them with the warmest heart because they really did try their best. They were seriously apologetic. His mother couldn't give a damn. As far as she was concerned, he was her knight in shining armor and he was right in all cases. The father, I didn't get a chance to speak to, but he stood by me that I heard through the siblings that he was always there. So I can imagine that he was, yes. His older sister tried to reach out to me a couple of months later saying, look, can you please try and sort things out? And I was like, what is there to sort out? Like, his other sister didn't, but the other sister who I didn't have any communication with reached out. And I was like, no, not really. No,
yeah, of course.
There's nothing there. I was like, I was done.
And Zara, what about your mom? Because, you know, obviously, I know that she recovered from her illness and she was doing better, fortunately. Like, so glad that you were able to cross that abyss at the time. But originally the idea was that she was vulnerable and she was like, you have to get married because I'm sick and I don't know what my chances are. And then, you know, she got better and I'm sure she was happy that she was able to now see you married to someone who she thought was good for you. But when it didn't really work out, was there an element of guilt and self-blame involved on your mother's part?
100% there was. She, bless her heart, felt extremely guilty, blamed it all on herself, didn't blame anyone else, blamed it all on herself and said, this is my fault. She was quiet and she wanted me out. She was angry. She wanted to, she's a mother, you know, she just wanted me out. Guilt was an understatement for her, definitely. I think it made her extremely negative towards marriage after that then, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, it's all, it wasn't her fault. She couldn't have, you know, it happens in the
I kept telling her that.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, parents are parents and they'll always sort of try and take the blame on themselves. So that's
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. So I kept telling her, look, it's not your fault. But she didn't believe me. She was like, no, it is.
I'm not surprised. So then, Zara, how did you finally, after everything that happened, how did you finally say, okay, this is it. I'm getting divorced. Bye. Like, when did you physically actually sign the paper and how did that materialize?
No, so basically, as soon as he sent me the stamp paper, it was understood that it was over. As soon as I contacted them, it was done. Like, there was nothing for me to do. I was not going to go back and do anything. The only thing I wanted was an official certificate, which took me a while to get because, A, they weren't answering, Imad wasn't answering my questions or my calls or whatever he was doing. Pakistan, I didn't really have anyone there who could get it done quick enough. So, like I said, it was done. There was no, I mean, The only thing that happened was after I moved, actually, he tried to get in contact again. This happened a couple of months after I moved to Dubai. So I moved here in May, for example, and he had contacted me in November, just towards the end of my birthday, just after my birthday, towards the end of the month, a week possibly before his birthday. And he messaged me and said, "Hi, how are you doing?" And I was like, "Wait, why is he messaging me?" And I was like, "I'm fine." And I don't even know why I responded, to be honest. And I think I was curious to what he wanted. I was really curious. So then I answered, I was like, "I'm fine, you know, going well." He goes, "Can we talk?" And at that point, I was like, in two minds, "No, not really." And I said, "To be honest, no, not really. Please, I really want to talk." "Okay, fine." I spoke. And I said, "Imad, what's wrong? Talk to me, whatever's going through your mind." And he said, "Look, I made a mistake." I'm like, "Excuse me?" "Because I made a mistake." He goes, "Karma has shown very quickly." I'm like, "What do you mean karma has shown very quickly?" And he said, "She left me for another guy again."
Oh, so Aiza, that girl.
And yeah.
She goes, "Old habits die hard. Old habits die hard."
And then I lost my job as well. So I was like, okay, so at that point, you know how we expect relief and be like, "Oh, look, shame, this happened to you." I didn't feel like that. I actually felt really sad because
you're a good person, Zehra.
I was like, no, it's not that. It's just like, well, I moved on. I don't even think about this anymore. And, you know, I would expect that someone else, because the thing is, I think people should learn from their mistakes and be able to move on and be happy. I don't want anyone to be unhappy. I don't think anyone deserves to be unhappy in their life. I think, you know, you should be smart enough to learn from what's gone on in your life and move on. And I would always wish them the happiest, you know, moments. I would never want them to go and, you know, roast in hell or whatever. I would never wish that upon them. I think it's important that people forgive themselves and they can find an end to it. And he said to me, you know, "Can we stay together?" I said, "No, we cannot stay together."
Oh my God, the audacity.
"No, but..." And then he goes, "Yeah, but that divorce paper wasn't even real." I was like, "What do you mean it wasn't real?" "But I signed it." And I said, "You got a government stamp paper. It was official." He goes, "No, but, you know, it doesn't mean anything." I'm like, "What do you mean it doesn't mean anything?" And of course it means everything. And I said to him, I said, "As much as I want you to be happy and move on, had she not left, you would not be on this guild and you would not be here." So
100%. 100%. Like, the reason he contacted you was because, you know, she had obviously done what she always does. She deserted him, she left him at the altar, and now he sort of came crawling back to you, which I'm so glad that you did not cave in. And yes.
Exactly. So then he was like, "Well, you know," and then so I just briefly said to him what I said to you was, you know, I wished him well. I told him to move on and to be happy and to forget the past and to learn from the mistake and not make that mistake again. He was like, "Yeah, yeah, I won't. Oh, but, you know, I'll be waiting for your message, your birthday message."
"Oh,
it's my birthday.
Shut
you know,
the
I really
door.
Want your message." And I was like, "Dude, seriously?" I didn't say anything. I was like, "Okay, cool." You know, I didn't even answer, respond to that. I just shut the phone. Came his birthday, he sent me a really angry message. "I can't believe you didn't wish me on my birthday. How could you? I'm waiting for you." I'm like, "Really? You expect me to respond to you? What the hell do you want from me? Like, well, what world do you expect me to do that?
I almost want to say I don't want to talk about him anymore, but I realize this entire podcast is about you know, discussing what happened. I mean, that's just, I think, crazy. But Zehra, I'm very, very curious to know this, okay, especially because we are South Asians, right?
Yeah.
And there's always this cultural baggage of, you know, being at a certain level in life at a certain age. When you finally sort of signed the papers, you were divorced and all that stuff, were you ever worried about how getting divorced, you know, might come in the way of you finding love and companionship again, especially in the South Asian community, you know? Because divorce, let's be honest, it is super stigmatized in our culture and globally, not just in our culture.
To be honest, honestly, I'm not going to lie. Yes, I was. Even though my family and people I know are generally like, you know, it happens. Because I think some people are much more open-minded than that and think, you know, it's okay. So in my experience, I was scared because I was like, what if I meet someone who I really, really like and their parents say no? I'm like, how am I going to do that? How am I going to challenge that? How am I going to, you know, go forward from that? How will I deal with that? But actually, what happened was a week after I got that message from my ex-husband, I moved to Dubai. I quit my job. I was like, I need to move. And I moved to Dubai.
Yes, so I remember.
I did, because I left you high and dry. I'm really sorry for that. But then
I know.
I told you I needed a holiday and then I never came back. Funny me. So I literally, I think it was, so I moved here in May, and by August, I had actually met someone.
Yay. And to which, I don't want you to talk about it already, because that's the juicy part.
Yep.
We will get
fine.
To it.
But then I was like, okay, well, you know, I'm here. And at that point, I was like, okay, so I've met someone, but what if they don't agree? So that has always worried me. And, you know, that fear stayed with me for a long time, built a lot of insecurity.
I'm not surprised. But Zara, one question to you, right? I very distinctly remember that you decided to go to Dubai and take a long vacation. You know, you obviously wanted some time to process everything that had happened. It was a major life event, getting divorced. Why Dubai? And like, why? Because I never saw you back. You never came back.
Yeah, I never came back because I had friends from university in Dubai. I was comfortable. I knew that I at least knew someone there. I knew enough people to keep me safe, and at the same time, I knew no one. And I needed to get over what I had gone. So what I tend to do is, the way I am is I cannot heal in the same place that broke me. I needed to move away. And in my mind, I thought, well, I'm going to go on a holiday. But then I was like, I'm sick of this whole... I think UK left such a bad taste for me because of all of this happened. I decided to look for a job, and I did find a job, actually. And just a day before, so I went for a month, and the day before I was meant to leave, the job actually I applied for responded back to me. I'm like, oh, by the way, congratulations, you got the job. So I'm like, huh? So then I just called my mom, and I was like, Mom, by the way, I'm not coming back. And she was like, okay. And I was like, okay. She's like, well, I have a job. And here she goes, okay, so what job? I'm like, okay, so I'm working here. She goes, huh? Okay, so where are you living? I'm like, oh, I'm living in this place. Okay. She was confused. She didn't know what to say to me because I was in such a sensitive state of mind that she was just like, okay to everything. Like, she didn't know how to react to me. I think both of my parents were like, well, if that makes you happy, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And so how did Mushahib come into the picture? I'm winking. I'm excited.
Yay, my lovely husband. So we met actually on a dating site. So I was, so like I said, you know, I was never in love with my ex-husband, but I was broken. Only broken for the fact that, you know, I used to think, how could a human being do that to another human being? Like, how do people do that? How do people screw people over and just live with it just fine and not, you know? But that love factor was never there. So I was like, you know, well, I'm in Dubai. I may as well just, you know, talk to a couple of people, whatever. So then I would. So Mani, if you know him, we also call him Mani. So Mani as a person is a very straightforward, blunt guy, cut straight to the point. I don't think he knows how to flirt till date. he was literally like, hi, this is Mushahid, how are you doing? And how's life? And, you know, how's it going nowadays? So I'm like, oh yeah, you know, well, I'm new around here, this and that, whatever. And literally, the first time we spoke, so the same night we spoke, I kid you not, the entire night, all he did was talk about his past.
Yep, I remember you told me.
Like, and I was just listening as a good friend, like, oh, but maybe this happened, but maybe that happened. Don't worry, it's okay, you'll get over it, don't worry. And he was just going through the motions of it. And I remember feeling, okay, well, you know, I'm just being a friend. Just like, I'm thinking the most this is going to happen is just be a friend. So whatever. I happened to me, so I'm someone who also enjoys my own company. So I, after work, went down to a shisha bar with a book. I sat there, had coffee, sitting with a shisha and reading my book happily. He calls me, "Hi there, how's it going? You know, what are you doing?" I'm like, "Well, you know, I'm just chilling in a shisha bar on my own." He goes, "On your own?" "Yes." "Why the hell would you be on your own? What's wrong with you? Are you sad? Are you upset? Are you depressed?" "No, I'm fine." "No, but why would you sit on your own?" I'm like, but nothing. I'm like, "I'm fine. Like, I'm happy on my own." Yeah. So then he comes, he meets me, and he, much to my surprise, he embraces me with such a warm hug that still I can still remember till day. I'm like, this was the sweetest thing. And he's really happy-go-lucky, and we go on a drive to some beach. And I kid you not, from 12 a.m. in the morning till 7 a.m. in the morning or 6 a.m. in the morning, we did not stop talking. Wow. It was nothing to do with our past. It was all about the funny things in life. It was all about, you know, our families. It was all about funny experiences we've had with our cousins. It was just hilarious. I remember just not stop laughing and not talking. And it was 6 a.m. in the morning that we decided, actually, we're hungry and we're going to eat. And then he's like, "Sarah," and I'm thinking, okay, I'm hungry, but I'm really sleepy. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I think I want to go home. And he's like, "No, please don't go home."
Aww.
I'm like, "Huh?" I think I really, really like you. I'm like, "Huh?" I'm like, this is our first meeting. He goes, "No, but I think I do."
Hey, listen, don't lie. You liked him back too.
I did, 100% I did, but I didn't expect him to say that, especially after the phone call that we had, where he was, you know, thinking about in the past. So I didn't expect that to happen. So I was like, "Huh? How did that happen?" Yeah. So then, you know, the one thing led to another. So the next day we went and watched a film, and we went to watch Conjuring, where I love horror movies, but I'm really, really scared. So he was holding my hand and just being very warm. And then he tells me, goes, "There, I need to say something." I'm like, "Okay." He goes, "I think I love you." And I thought he was an idiot. I was like, "You're kidding me? Oh, you're just having it on." And another side of me is thinking, well, okay, so most of my cousins are married to their first love, who they met at the age of 13. And they did the same thing. And they said it was love at first sight. So I guess it can happen. And he was shocked, saying, "I don't understand how this happened. No, no, how could this happen? Who are you? What are you? Where are you from? Are you a witch? Are you this?" I'm like, "No, I'm just me." And then he introduces me to his friends, and he's shy, so he never told anyone we met on a dating site. So they ask him, you know, "So how'd you meet? He instantly goes, "Oh, so we met in a lift."
Oh my God.
I couldn't stop right after. I was in stitches, and they were looking at me and looking at him. They're like, "You met in a what?" They were like, "Lift." And I couldn't, and I just, you know how I'm meant to be supportive and not laugh and be like, "Yes, yeah, we met in a lift." No, I was blatantly
of
out just staring at his
face.
Yeah.
So,
how he came into the picture.
So wait, Zahra, now I have to ask you, did his parents know that you were dating, and did they know that you were divorced, and were you worried about, you know, "Oh my God, how are they going to perceive this?" Yeah, exactly.
I mean, no, they never knew that we were dating. The whole time, they never knew that we were dating. My parents did. It was a little bit of a tricky situation, because when my parents, with his parents, they would know and they'd pressure him to get married. He wanted to avoid that. Secondly, because of our past, we had a lot of insecurities. So as well as moving, having a blissful start, we had to battle through our own insecurities that kept popping up with each other. So we didn't feel fit to tell, he didn't feel fit to tell his parents.
Okay.
I wanted to be open about it.
Okay.
So when his parents found out, when this whole marriage thing happened, they were like, "Okay, so what's the problem?" And I was like, "Huh?" And I was literally really, really scared, thinking, no, they're going to be really apprehensive. They're going to be, you know, they're not going to do it. They're going to think, you know, well, he could marry someone who's not. But they were like, "No, they didn't ask me anything about my past. They didn't ask for his name. They didn't ask anything. My husband had already told him, like, this and this happened." But within one day, he just gave me a call, because I was here in Dubai and he was over there for Eid. And he just gave me a call within 3 hours. I told them they're really happy, and they bought a cake at home, and they're cutting a cake in celebration.
Aww.
And I was like, "What?" So I mean, it was really...
That is amazing. And for all our listeners, by the way, I know the assumption is that once you get divorced, you only get married to someone who's divorced or who has kids from another marriage. And let me tell you that in this case, there was nothing of that sort. I do not believe in that notion that, oh my God, once you get divorced, your shelf life is over. And so you're now only supposed to marry not a bachelor, but someone, you know, who's already been in a relationship and things didn't work out from him either. So I think that is such a huge slap on the society's face. You know, I'm really glad that that happened. And we're not going to get in. We're not going to get too much into like how your family responded, but I am going to give everyone an overview of the fact that this time, Zehra's brother and father and extended family, they were very much involved because they got on really well with Mujahid for obvious reasons. I've only spoken with him once, but I can tell that he's very warm and welcoming and easygoing. So that is that. And I'm really glad that you got to actually have the proper wedding, a wedding where you were happy, a wedding where you had your little funny moments with your husband after the nikah, unlike the first time, which was horrific.
It was amazing.
I know. And so what was the date that you got married? And this was again in Pakistan, right?
Yes, we got married on the 18th of February, and it was an amazing wedding.
Aww.
It was beautiful. We'll never forget it.
You deserve the best.
Everyone does. Yeah. Not just me, everyone does, I think.
Of course.
But it was a happy moment. Not many of my family were there because of the distance, because of the fact that it happened so soon again, because we planned it in a way that, you know, let's just get it done. Hmm. And there was another wedding previously in Pakistan, which the whole family had come for. So coming from America to Pakistan in the same, in 2 months was very difficult. So few people, but it was great. It was an amazing wedding.
Yeah, and that's all that matters at the end of the day.
Exactly.
So, Zehra, now, amidst all the darkness and the intense nature of your journey, what was the silver lining for you?
The silver lining was how my husband and I were able to be married despite our, you know, problems that we have with our own insecurities, to be able to fight them. And to be able to say, okay, these are the insecurities we have, and to get through that. But also being married to him, to the right person, also brought me and my family together. We and my family are much more closer than we were before. We talk all the time. We meet each other all the time. My brothers were here over holiday and they spent a really good time with us. And it's just really, you know, it's endearing and it's overwhelming to see how much I missed out on my family life because of everything that had gone on. So I think for me, that was a huge part, that everything, despite everything, I managed to find someone who's, you know, a heart of gold, and that my family and I are also really, really close again, which was always important to me. I never thought it would happen, generally.
And I would give Mushahid a lot of credit for that, because I think if a spouse is able to help you bridge that gap with your family, that is a really huge sign that they're the perfect person for you. I think it's safe to say that life with money is amazing in Dubai. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Yay. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to ask you, we're very close to the end, and oh my God, we've been talking since forever, but it doesn't like, see, it's so like easy going with you, and it's almost like a conversation, and these are important questions, right? So I'm going to ask you, this question is slightly like, consider it like two questions combined into one, okay?
Okay.
You know, so again, going back to this whole, not just the South Asian culture, but generally divorces are very stigmatized and all that stuff. And you would see a lot of traditional parents, they would say that, oh my God, marriage is all about compromising, and do not get a divorce because you know, it blots your reputation, especially if you're a woman. Or they're going to say, have kids. Just have kids with him and everything will be fine. Like, kids are almost considered as, you know, a band-aid to a broken marriage. Is there any truth in that statement?
50-50. So I have known someone who was literally on the brink of getting divorced, but then had a kid, and I don't think they've been more happy in their lives, which is really, really weird. Because I don't come across situations like that. But also, on the other hand, there is no shame in saying, I want out. My parents got divorced. My dad was absolutely against the idea of getting married because he was very old-fashioned and said, you know, a family needs a father's name and a wife needs a father name. Therefore, you know, if you don't have my name, you won't get married. It's utter rubbish. None of this makes sense. And he slowly, gradually understood that over time that actually that's not true, especially when I got married, especially when, you know, life had just ended up being great. He has also realized that there's no truth to that.
Hmm.
Also, coming from a family where my parents are divorced, to watch your parents fight day in, day out is the most draining, the most torturing thing a child can ever go through. It's really important. When my mother came to me and said, I want a divorce, would you agree if I divorce your father? My siblings and I said yes in a heartbeat. We're like, please. My dad hated us for it. But I kid you not, since they got divorced, our lives are so much at peace. We are able to get along much better with our parents, with each other. I think if you want I definitely won't say, you know, you have a few fights and you get divorced. But if you really have come to a point where you think it needs to be over, end it, because you deserve to be happy and so did the other person.
Right.
Give yourself that much time and the other person.
And I mean, you know, Zehra, I am personally like heavily allergic to when older like folks, they advise you to have kids because you're having issues, or, you know, I've noticed a lot of parents would push their daughter to have kids well within a year of being married because it apparently it seals the deal. And it is such rubbish. One, give your child enough time to analyze if this marriage, especially like for those who have an arranged marriage, allow them to take some time. You know, let them see 100%. If this person is right, even though you're married. And ideally, like, I'm not necessarily big into the concept of arranged marriages. I think you should be able to find love on your own end. I know it's not always possible for people, but especially if you get married through an arranged setup, you need to give your child enough time to process this new relationship and also make sure that it's the right relationship for them even before they consider having kids, right? And the other thing is 100%. having kids is a choice. I don't think South Asians will ever understand that, like, just because you're married doesn't mean you have to have kids. That's for like another, that's a whole other discussion. But I 100% am confident that having kids is no solution to fixing a broken marriage. It is, you're being selfish. It is toxic for your child. It is toxic for their headspace. You will not be raising healthy kids, right? And I know so many people who were forced into having kids to fix their marriage and it didn't work out. So eventually they had kids and then they got divorced and now it's harder on their children.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're sort of...
100%.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's more of the case of, you know, the foundation of your marriage needs to be stronger before you dive into something else.
Right.
Finding out your marriage is another story, and that's something that needs time and nurturing before mm-hmm. you can jump into that.
Yeah.
So you're right. Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, I just like, it makes me so angry when like, I know so many women who are my age who would say, but you know what, they don't get along well, but look, at least because they have a kid, they're happy together. I'm like, no, they're not happy. They are miserable. They are together till this kid turns a certain age and understands what it means to get divorced. And we don't want to throw this kid into a disarray. So we're going to be married up until a certain age. And let's just say the couple doesn't get divorced. They live a miserable life. And I don't think anyone deserves that. So
I see that often. You're mm-hmm. right. I mean, this one case with someone I know who's, you know, they're actually in love, which is very surprising. This is a one-off case. But the majority of cases I've seen, it's been really difficult because the parents are trying to handle themselves plus their kids. And it's just so much pressure on them that they may end up breaking up anyway.
Exactly.
They individually themselves break into pieces and they can't pick themselves up. So
exactly.
It's definitely a difficult place to be. And I think it's important that someone has to be sure of themselves, sure of their mm-hmm. marriage, to work before they make a decision on whether they want to bring someone else into this world or not.
Yep.
And if you want to, then great. If you don't want to, that's also okay.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
is also okay. At the end of the day, you have to live with that choice. You have to bring that child up. You
exactly.
need to raise them the right way. It's exactly. Your choice.
You have to pay for braces. Let's not forget that. Okay, that was like a very intense, topic for me, because like I see so many people in my culture who struggle with it. So I just really wanted to include that, because I hope they tune into this episode, even though we're talking about it towards the end. But hopefully that's an incentive for people, you know. All right. Well, guess what, Zehra? We are 1 hour and 20 minutes into this conversation and we've reached...
Wow.
Yeah, that was a long conversation, but that's okay. We've reached the finale, which is the advice section. So, Zehra, what advice can you give those who may be thinking about getting a divorce or are in the process of getting a divorce or are already divorced? And by advice, I mean, what can they do to make it better and not attach their self-worth to their marital status?
Okay, number one, always keep an open mind. Never think that life has come to an end. You have to learn to live for yourself. Let love happen when it has to. Tomorrow can be far more beautiful than what it is today. That is something that I solemnly believe in. And never regret. Always learn from your mistakes. Always move on, learning from what you have done. Know that it has made you stronger. Never think that it's been a mistake. Use it to your advantage. Three, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Always be ready to move on. Never be stuck in one situation. You know, never be commitment phobic. It's really easy to fall into that place where you're just like too scared. But you never know what's on the other side. The grass can be greener.
Mm-hmm.
So never give up. So that's something that I really want to say.
Yeah.
And if anything, my life has sort of proved that, you know, being through all so much, I have now, by God's grace, a beautiful life that I wouldn't miss out for the world. Had I been commitment phobic, I wouldn't have seen what I have today. So,
Zehra, it was so, so, so nice to catch up with you. I am highly indebted to you for your transparency and, most importantly, your willingness to share such an intimate part of your life with the rest of us, especially to help those who may be going through something of this nature as we speak. Couples who divorce are, they still feel a sense of shame and failure, even in the age of the so-called fault-free divorce and the prenup. Almost half of those who go through a marriage breakup believe that their lives are damaged by the stigma in some capacity. And there's no denying that women are twice as likely as men to feel shame after divorce. In fact, a recent report showed that nearly a third of divorcees tried to stave off the breakup for as long as they could because they believe that, you know, marriage should be a forever thing, which is, yes, it's true. I mean, in an ideal world, marriage should be a forever thing. But nobody gets into a marriage thinking that, oh, you know what, we'll get divorced after 2 years. Things happen. Right? And there is also often a lot of pressure from parents to hold on to that ring and that relationship, especially if you have kids. Now, personally, I don't think that having kids or no kids is a good enough reason to stay in a marriage if it's pushing you into an unhealthy mental space. It is absolutely not worth it. And getting divorced should not be seen as a personal failure. I feel very strongly about that. And you should not have to keep trying to salvage your marriage if it has reached a dead end. You can't possibly live a happy rest of your life in something toxic. And let's not forget that it's not just not good for you, but it's also not good for your kids or their headspace. Yes, divorces are unfortunately riddled with stigma. Dealing with each other and oneself through the process of separation and divorce or reconciliation once the idea of such action has been mooted, it takes, you know, some serious heart work and hard work. And I'm not talking so much about the legal aspects of it as much as I'm talking about the emotional entanglements of really, you know, going through that raw process. But women, fortunately, are challenging that perception, pushing for change. And the key really is to connect with, you know, people like Zehra, for example, who can hear you, who have been through the process, who can offer you information. So please don't shy away, because those connections will change your life. Your decision to lead a happy life and start a new chapter will transform your life. It is not too late to start over. As always, I would like to thank everyone who took the time to tune into this episode. I hope that you can seek inspiration from Zehra's journey and hopefully, you know, take the right steps in pursuit of happiness to give yourself another shot. I will see you again next week with a new episode. Till then, chin up.